Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com and on the Giants mobile app. This guy's Jeff Eagles. I am John Schmelk. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513. Paul Schwartz in the New York Post will be joining us at 12:30 and maybe a special guest between now and then as well. The OTAs, organized team activities, begin on Monday. It is OTA number one. And Jeff, why don't you kind of give the fan a rundown of what OTAs are and why they're a significant step. It's phase three of the Giants offseason program.
Well, the OTAs are important because it's kind of where you start to install all of your offense, defense, special teams. The coaches get an idea of putting the roster together in terms of depth. You have your draft picks here. You have basically your whole team. With the exception, remember last year, folks, that Paul Perkins missed a lot of these because of the fact that he did not graduate. He graduated, but he had to wait until his class graduated.
Yeah, UCLA is one of those four-semester programs, so they go into June, and you can't leave.
So for the most part, I don't think the Giants have any of those types of players this year, but the OTAs, John, are really just it's the starting process, on-the-field work, a lot of individual works at each position, and then they'll come together and do a bunch of different drills and then run some routes, and not a lot of physical contact at this camp, at the OTAs.
Zero, actually.
You're not allowed to do any of it. Which is sometimes can be, you know, from a coach's perspective, a hindrance because what can you really get done? But actually, you do get a lot done in these OTAs. And like I said, you start to dig into the playbook installation. For the new guys that are coming in here, both free agents and draft picks, it's a whole new playbook for them. So they have to understand new terminology. Something at their old school that may have been called X is now going to be called Y, even though it's the same thing. And really just trying to get on the same page. Now, what they'll do after these OTAs are over, they will take everything from these guys, and then when they come back in training camp, they'll give them back to them. Nobody gets to take anything home because you don't know if that guy's coming back, and then he has the playbook. That's a no-no.
And, of course, you know, the real trick is, too, is this installation process actually happens three or four times during the offseason. They will give you the playbook, teach you in the classroom, then you'll go through the whole offense, then you'll start it again. Then you'll start it again. Then when you get to training camp, you do it again.
You start from beginning.
Exactly.
To end.
So you basically get this stuff from beginning to end pounded into you three or four separate times over the course of this offseason.
And really, the training camp, when they come here day one, there'll be different guys here. But the fact is that at least they have some familiarity with the playbook so that it doesn't take as long to learn it going through camp because you do start over. But if you didn't have these OTAs, and this is one of the reasons why the Players Association and the coaches and the organizations want them, because there isn't as much time in training camp these days. It's not back in the day when there was basically almost 6 weeks, 7 weeks of training camp. You have plenty of time to install the playbook. Now there's not enough, so that's why they do it now.
How much different are these spring workouts now than what they were when you were playing with, say, like the Eagles in the early 90s?
Well, I think that the only difference is the advancement of training. You know, a lot of different movements and things that they do, but really it was the guys that were lifting and running.
How much on-field stuff did you do back then?
Zero.
Really?
Zero.
No,
yeah.
On-field stuff.
There
in
was
the
no
spring.
OTAs. There was a mini camp. Remember, okay, after the draft, everybody had a mini camp right after the draft. So there was no rookie mini camps. There was nothing. And listen, because I played as long as I did, it changed as it went. But early on in my career, it was as soon as the draft was over, you had a mini camp, mandatory mini camp for veterans and rookies. And then as soon as mini camp was over, you went home and you came back for training camp.
So you guys were able to do that because training camp was so much more.
Training camp started the first week in July.
Oh, wow. So training camp was a good 2-3 weeks longer. So you didn't have to do the stuff in May because you had the extra time and you were doing more two-days and things like that.
Here's the difference.
I got it.
So you talk about how much on-field that we had or didn't have. We didn't have a lot of on-field stuff during the spring, if you will. We had more of it on the field than training camp.
And
full contact.
Right.
So that's where it kind of got away, and now the players are – it's been enforced. What the rules are very enforced with as far as contact and things like that. So, really, OTAs are, you know, they're on. What is it? I thought it's, what's the OTA stand for again?
Organized team activities.
That's what it was. Yeah, organized team. That's basically what it is. It's organized in a sense. It's broken up into like we came into the facility today. There was guys in the weight room. There was guys on the field, and you know, they guys come off the field, and then the guys that were in the weight room, they go out on the field. It's very position specific. Offense is out there, defense is lifting.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way these guys set it up is, you're right, the offense does stuff on their own, the defense stuff does on their own. What makes the OTA different and what makes Phase 3 different, which is what OTAs will be next week, and Phase 2, which is what the team is in now, you actually will have offense and defense on the field at the same time.
Correct.
Even without any contact, they will be going up against each other.
Yeah, they're just, you know, they're running routes and things like that. The other difference between when I was playing and now was the off-season conditioning program used to be 16 weeks long.
Wow. So what time did you guys show up for that?
We usually started the middle of March.
March 1st,
now they come
huh?
in around the middle of
April. Yeah.
So, you know, it's a little bit pushed back. And really, if you were to ask me, I don't think it makes a difference either way. I think that the guys that want to train come March time, I think they do. And I think that really when, after the season's over, if you don't make the playoffs, it's the first part of January. You get all January, all February, and half of March. You're ready to get going again as a football player. You're ready to start. So guys start working out, and I do believe it brings a lot of chemistry. It brings a lot of camaraderie to the team when the team workouts are together, and even for that long a period of time, I think it's a bonus. They don't get it as much now. They only get it starting in April and then going through. The Giants still have a veteran mini camp coming up soon. So,
yeah, middle of June.
So that will that'll be their big one. I think that's the last of the organized mini camps, everything until training camp starts.
Yeah, so everyone will basically break camp, mini camp, spring camp, whatever you want to call it.
Exactly.
That'll get broken in the second, I believe it's June 15th to the 17th or 16th to the 18th this year, the third week of June, and that'll be the end of the players until they come back at the end of July for training camp.
And as Coach McAdoo breaks it into phases, right, that'll be the end of what, phase four?
That'll be phase four, I guess, yeah. Minicamp is phase four, OTAs are phase three. Phase two is on the field work, individual position-wise, and then phase one is simply just weight room work.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's mandated by the league now. I think that's kind of how you have to split it up
there's no question.
Terms of things like that.
No question. And also the other thing that changed back in the day for everybody that didn't know this, you know, the coaches were always allowed in the weight room and they were always taking you onto the field.
That is not allowed in phase one anymore.
No, you are not allowed in there as a coach.
Correct.
And you're only allowed to meet with the players a certain amount of time as they're in the facilities.
And you can't talk football with them. You can only talk, like the first 2 weeks during phase one, you can't even talk game plan, give out playbooks or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I don't know how important
does
it
sound
it is,
like stupidity? Probably.
It is stupidity. It's come on. It's football. It's a game. It's a business. It's a job. I mean, why can't you, you know, if you work at a place and, hey, you know what? We can't talk about our business we're going to be doing in 2 weeks, but, you know.
Let's talk about our business that we're going to be doing
John,
in 2 weeks.
John, what's your cell number? I'll call you. Hey, we'll talk about business.
Do you know what it reminds me of? You know that, I don't know if, did you watch Seinfeld a lot when it was on?
Not a lot, but I mean, over the years.
There was an episode where George Costanza was working for the Yankees, right? And the Mets wanted to talk to him about being their head of scouting. So they invite him to lunch, and he's like, oh, thanks for having me to lunch. Thanks for having me to lunch. And they're like, we're not having lunch. Well, I just want to have a conversation. We're not having a conversation, but now let's have a nice conversation.
That's exactly what it is. That sums it up.
These teams are of – very careful because it's in the CBA. These are rules the teams have to follow. It might seem counterintuitive. And frankly, for the young players, I'm sure they'd like to be doing a lot of that football stuff with the coaches, but it's against the rules, so they're not allowed. But it changes now in this phase, and now they're doing a lot more football stuff.
And also the contact is looked on very, very closely because, remember, there's teams. I don't know, was it the Patriots?
Ravens.
The Ravens, that's right. They lost.
And Seahawks, right? I think Ravens and the Seahawks.
And Seahawks, mm-hmm. Exactly. They were they are OTA violators, and I think they had draft picks taken away and fines. So I guess they do monitor it.
It sounds like the name of a band. The OTA Violators.
Exactly. Well, I'll give you a funny quick story because I know we have Paul Schwartz coming up. But I remember
back we have some time. Go ahead.
When we used to be the old Giant Stadium where the old practice fields were, which were now out in the parking lot, there was a gentleman, we called him Smurf.
Okay.
Okay. And the reason we called him because he was a black guy, okay, that worked for the league, and he had this white hair, and he looked like a Smurf. And so when the Smurf was there, the Smurf would come onto the practice field, and he had a roster, and he would just go by, and he would start checking names off because the teams had a lot of times they would come in, and they would have more players on the field than they should.
How big was this guy's white hair? Was it like Don King big?
Yes, yes. Not as like all over the place. It was kind of like almost like a
helmet?
You know, an afro. It was a white afro.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
So and Strahan nicknamed him Smurf. I mean, he could call him that, but but the name stuck. So every time we would see him walk through the gate at the old practice facility over there, they would be like, "Oh, here comes the Smurf. I hope they got the roster right today."
Strahan was good with the nicknames. You know, Strahan was the guy who nicknamed Tino the Count.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, he's always been good with nicknames. Still is, I'm sure. But you know, so there are ways that the league does look at these teams, and as far as rosters, making sure they have enough guys in there. And he was out there during the season too, because a lot of times, I'm not saying the Giants ever did this, I'm just saying teams have done this, is that they might have an extra guy or two out there. Not today. Not this is years ago. They might have an extra receiver or an extra defensive back, just kind of practicing. And
I believe teams are now required to set up a GoPro for every practice, and they tape every practice. The league will randomly request practice tapes, and they will make sure that all the rules are followed.
Yeah.
So you can't mess around, you know, because you don't want to lose draft picks, you don't want to lose practices in the offseason, all that stuff. I mean, it can't happen.
And I know that, you know, with the with players, they say, "Oh, you know, he was late for a meeting. You know, how do you find you find these guys? You hit them in the pocketbook," and that's what the league does to the teams. They hit them in the pocketbook and the draft picks, which can be that can be detrimental when you're building through a draft and lose a third round draft pick or something because of something stupid that you're doing on the field in the off season that you're not supposed to.
By the way, you are taking your calls before Paul Schwartz joins us at 12:30 at 201-939-4513. So let's get to our first call right now. We'll try to get as many in as we can before we get to Paul Schwartz. We'll go to Will in Atlanta, and we go to some open lines if you want to jump on in. What's up, Will?
Hi, Will.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
What's
hey,
up, man?
You know, the apps doesn't seem to be working on the phone or on the computer.
Okay.
Oh, that's good to know. Mr. Dominic, did you hear that? All right, he's going to check it out right now. I appreciate that. Well, what's going on? That might explain why we only have... Oh, no, it's up there. I see it on the phone right now. Well, what's going on?
Oh, okay. Well, it's not on the computer. Anyway, I wanted to find out. I know you guys, in the, when the season was over, you talked about some of these offensive line players are going to go to offensive line school.
Well, we didn't say that. We didn't say that. Some callers wanted them to. We didn't say that they were going to.
Yeah, a lot of them do.
All right. So is there I guess my question is there an offensive line school? Is it something that produces results? And is Eric Flowers or any of the other players scheduled to do that?
Well, I mean, that's nothing that they announce. And, you know, right now they're doing team stuff, so they wouldn't be able to do that sort of stuff between April and June when they're here at the facility. Whether or not they're going to do something between June and August, I don't know. And, you know, the thing about these offensive line schools, Will, it's funny. Some people think, oh, it's got to be a great thing. You're working on it. I've also heard some coaches, and not with this team, but with other teams, you know, complain off the record that, you know what, the problem you run into, Jeff, is these guys learn these techniques and ways to do things at these schools, but it's not the way their team wants them to do things. So when they come in and the coach asks them to do something a certain way, the player might revert back to what he learned at these private offensive line schools. When these issues, he's calling, you know, LeCharles Bentley instead of talking to his assistant coach. Yeah. And, you know, you can't get into trouble doing stuff like
and
that.
I think the premise behind the schools, and it's a good point, and I'm sure that it happens all the time, like you said, but the biggest part about it is it's all technique work, things like that. But it goes hand in hand. If you're Mike Solari and you're teaching a certain technique from a tackle like Eric Flowers, and he's out in California working with a guy that's teaching a different technique, then you got a problem there. So I would imagine that there's some conversation between whoever's running, and I don't think – now, don't get us wrong, the schools. It's not like you're going to a school. It's just, you know, these are individual – these are like trainers, if you will. They're guys that they go work with. They work with them for an extended period of time. But there's probably some dialogue between the coaches so that the Mike Solari can talk to, you know, whoever the coach is that's training these guys. Hey, listen, these are the things that I want you to work on with him. I know I can't do it because of the rules, but if he's paying you to do this, can you maybe work on X, Y, and Z, and when he comes back, we're all on the same page. So,
okay. Yeah. So you don't know if anybody's doing that, or hiring somebody to help him and have that communication with
the only guy I've heard about DJ Fluker is doing something with Willie Anderson, the former offensive lineman. I've heard about that. I know in the past, John Jerry and I think Richburg went to the LeCharles Bentley school. I don't know if they did that this year. And Pugh does the MMA wrestling stuff out there with
and that has to do with all hands and you know and quickness with the hands and things like that. So you know, there's kind of on a different note with the kickers and punters and snappers, we all have, you know, the camps that we grew up going to Those are we go back and work with those guys because they all have a critical eye. I mean, they can see things. I will tell you that if you're a kicker or punter or snapper on the Giants, Tom Quinn's the best there is. I mean, he is amazing as far as technique work. He will study you for days upon days, and then all of a sudden one day come up to you and say, "Hey, let's go in the film room. I saw something I want to work with." So, you know, outside of this building, there's not many, you know, really need to go anywhere. But there are a lot of guys around the league that trust the others to give them their type of it's instruction that they need.
You got anything else for us, Will?
Yeah. One other thing on a sidebar. Whatever happened to Anita Marks? How come she's not on anymore?
Will, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. She's doing a lot of work up at ESPN now, so she has moved on.
Right.
201-939-4513. Also, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Let's go back to the phones and go to Nick in the Meadowlands. He's up next. How are you, Nick?
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
Hi, Nick.
Good.
Hey, last week we were talking. I want to let you know, John, you had a lot of good points last Friday.
On what, about, specifically?
About the free agency, you know, with the salary cap and everything coming in. You can't build a team like you used to, and you got to hit on just about every cylinder, you know what I mean, just about to get a team that you want.
Yeah, Nick, I want to build on that a little bit, too. One other thing, and I kind of wrote about this in a story that's going to go up on Giants.com next couple days. It's so important for a team that's successful to get high-quality play from guys still on their rookie contracts because they're so low in comparison to what guys make after they hit their second and third contracts that you have to get production out of guys in their rookie contracts. And the Giants right now are in that position. Odell Beckham Jr., the best offensive player, on his rookie contract. Sterling Shepard, one of their top three wide receivers, on his rookie contract. Last year, you had Jonathan Hankins on his rookie contract. Landon Collins is on his rookie contract. Eli Apple's on his rookie contract. Darian Thompson still on his rookie contract. So you have a number of young guys, not to mention this year's draft class, that are on their rookie contracts. Devon Kennard, another guy, that are helping the Giants, and they're not paying them a big portion of their salary cap, which gives your team the advantage. That's why the Seahawks have kind of fallen off a little bit, in my opinion. They had all those young defensive guys on their rookie contracts dominating. Yep. Now all of a sudden you're paying Cam Chancellor, you're paying Earl Thomas, you're paying Michael Bennett more money. You're paying Wagner, the linebacker, and you don't have money left to put guys around those players. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you get hit at one point. But even coming off of the rookie contract, look at what they've done with the defense last year, you know?
Yep,
which
absolutely.
Which is another good thing. The players that are they're there, you know, and you saw it, you know, forget paper, you know, you saw it on the field last year.
Hey, Nick, by the way, I want to add one other thing. I mentioned how it was either this week or last week, and I said if Jerry Reese goes out there and spends big money in free agency, he usually hits, and the guys usually work out.
Yeah.
Somebody pointed out on Twitter one guy that didn't work out, and I forgot to mention it was my fault. One guy that he did go after only lasted a couple years here was Jeff Schwartz. It didn't work out for everybody involved.
Yeah.
He had to move on from him. And
that
was
Jeff
the one
Schwartz,
guy.
He used to live across the street from my buddy, man, my lifelong buddy.
Oh, that's funny.
Paramus over there. And Chase Blackburn ended up moving in that house.
All right. You
know, actually, Chase Blackburn was there first, I think, and then Jeff Schwartz ended up purchasing that house, and then what happened with the injuries with him. And I think when they that's it. I don't think Chase ever went back to that house whenever he came back to the Giants.
Well, is Chase in Carolina now?
Yes.
Is he the special teams coordinator or assistant special teams coach?
I think he's
Chase Blackburn.
I think
Blackburn,
he's the assistant
special teams guy.
He was
good mind.
Oh, he's a great guy, too. I love
mind,
Chase.
Man.
Oh,
he,
yeah, absolutely.
But the other thing was a guy from New Milford
assistant
called, and he was talking about wrestling. And you know what? I played football. I went into college playing football, and I always wrestled. And let me tell you, on both sides of the football, that's great, you know, with that leverage and being able to have balance, you know, knowing all that. I think that was a great point that you topped off on, you know, after that guy called. You know, that's another good point that you made last week, you know, that got me interested after I called. But the other thing I wanted to say, I think that with the picks that we got, you know, like, and plus the free agency, like Brandon Marshall, Evan Ingram, I think they're just going to make our defense even better. Being able to see, like, a look, you know, like Washington gives you with Jordan Reed and other teams, I think it's just going to make them that much better. Let's just hope it goes the other way and the offensive line gets better from the defense to get to see, you know what I mean? And
Well, listen, if that, we know that that offensive line's got a little bit of work to do, but you kind of know who they're going to be when they line up for the first game of the season against Cowboys. We know who the guys are, unless there's somebody going to be coming in here, you know, a little bit later. But the fact is that they all know they have to play better. They won 11 games with the offensive line last year, and I think that Mike Solari being in his second year coming back coaching, I think it should be able to click.
They're together, you know. Like, you know, that's what an offensive line needs, is they need a little bit of time together to – have a chemistry, you know. But going to my guy that I love, you know, right here, watching more tape and more film and more film on this guy, Adam the Viking, I'm going to start nicknaming him by the looks of him.
Oh, Biznavati? Yeah.
Yeah, man. He's rugged, man. I like that. And then listening to David Deal, and look what number he pops up wearing, you know.
Yep.
And David Deal was a fifth-round pick. This guy's a sixth-round pick. These guys – I hope that it translates, you know, and his feet get quicker and the whole nine yards. But watching him on tape, man, he's a brawler. I like that.
Yeah, you know, once he gets his hands on you, you're finished.
Yeah, he's a big dude, man. Imagine 10, 15 more pounds of muscle on him. I look at the Cowboys line, and I like, you know, look at Tyron Smith, man. That guy looks like the, you know. That's what I want right there, man.
Yeah, that's a
and this
big
guy
boy.
Could turn into that, you know.
Well, remember Tyron Smith.
Weight, you know,
remember Tyron Smith was the 12th overall or 8th overall pick in the draft. This guy was a 6th round pick.
I'm not saying play wise. I'm saying, like, look at his physique.
know.
You know, this guy, he's already big. Look at the arms and shoulders on this guy. He's a big dude, man. That's why I call him a Viking, man. I would love to have him on my side 1,000 years ago or today on the field. You know.
Well, you got him on your side today.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, thank you, Nick.
Care.
Yep, you're welcome. Yeah, he, you know, listen, they obviously liked him. They moved up in the draft to get him. I think he's very good in the run blocking. He's getting a little work on the pass protecting. They didn't do a lot of passing. That Pittsburgh offense ran the football. We did a study on them. Remember, that was one of our teams. But the fact is that he's a scrapper. He's one of those guys that you look at as he looks like a lineman. And he'll mold in really good with Pugh and those guys, too.
And one other guy that I've heard referred to as a Viking many times before is Paul Schwartz, who covers the Giants for the New York Post. Paul, you got John Schmelk and Jeff Fiegels right with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
He's certainly been around as long as a Viking.
Raping and pillaging as he goes. How you doing, Paulie?
All right, now wait a second.
Okay.
Jeff Fiegels.
Yes, Paul.
Did Jeff Fiegels just say something about how long I've been around?
That's a good point.
I tried to stop myself, but I just kept going. Sorry about that, Paul. Yep, that's okay.
Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. Well, when I see you in person, we're going to have to hash this out, Jeff.
Well, Paul, I got a question. What was your first year covering the league or the Giants?
You see, now why are we going down this road?
Well, I want to see who's been around the league longer, you or Jeff. I'm trying to figure it out.
Probably about the same.
I think I've had a few years on Jeff. My first year covering the Giants was 1994. Jeff, what were you doing in 1994?
I was punting footballs for the Arizona Cardinals.
Well, but Paul, that's the thing. He was in the league before 94, so he's actually been around longer than you have.
Yeah, but he's also got better hang time than me.
All right,
that's what we call hanging around for a long time.
Absolutely.
That's right.
All right, Paul,
we
got OTAs coming around next week. We'll be bombarded by fans on Twitter that want us all to make judgments based on guys running around with no pads, not able to hit each other. What are some of the things you can actually look for and figure out from OTAs that begin next week?
Oh, I think you can tell a few things. I mean, look, you were just talking about, you know, the offensive line and the you know, Biznawati. You're not going to be able to tell a whole lot from him, let's face it. You know, you can tell he's big. You like the way he looks. Got big hands, strong-looking guy. But you can tell size. You can tell quickness. And I think you can really tell, you know, mental acumen. You know, you can tell how quickly these guys pick up stuff. You know, they're putting stuff in every day. And it's interesting to see, you know, just when the coaches, all these rookies now are getting coached by different coaches, in a different scheme, asked to do different things. And it's always interesting to me to see which guys can make a fast transition, which guys can make a slow transition, which guys, you know, don't make a transition. So I think, and you can tell that from talking to the coaches, from watching a little bit, just seeing who's getting it. Like last year at this time and then a few weeks after this, all we kept hearing was about Darian Thompson,
yep.
right? that he's, and he was not a guy who was big and strong, and you looked at him and said, man, that, look at that guy. I want him on my team. But you could tell from what the coaches were saying and from what he was saying that he was getting it. And that proved to be accurate. He ended up being a starter, you know, very early in his career until he got hurt. So those are the kind of things I look for. You know, who's getting it at this point?
And I'll tell you what, you know, that is a that goes a long ways. I mean, it really does. Obviously, we were talking about him last year, and because Spags kept talking about him, saying, hey, listen, I can't believe how fast this kid is picking up the playbook. He's starting to make calls out there. He's showing some leadership, which kind of turns me to the new rookie class that we see in OTAs for the first time. You know, Paul, these are the guys that come out of college. They were the studs on their teams, and now they come into the National Football League. They're looking at guys like Odell Beckham and Eli Manning on the field. They got those big wide eyes. But, you know, for the most part, this is important time for these guys to learn. And then, of course, when it comes into training camp, what have you seen so far? I wasn't out around there. I think they just started on Monday. Anything, any surprising looks out of the rookie class that you like?
Well, you know, it is interesting, Jeff, when you look at it, because, you know, you see them first in the rookie class, right? And so you're looking at the draft picks and a couple of the, you know, bigger name undrafted free agents, and you're really honing in on honing them. And then you go to an OTA, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. All these other guys are here now.
Exactly.
You know, so they go from big fish, you know, in a rookie pond to, you know, much smaller fish in this massive pond when the Odells and the Elis and the Snacks Harrisons and, you know, JPP and Olivia Vernon start, you know, coming in. So it is interesting. Well, I can tell observations. I mean, Davis Webb is a really big dude. You know, he's just a big, you know, he looks like a prototypical quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, his size is similar to Eli, but he's bigger than Eli. He just looks, especially when Eli came in as a rookie. So, you know, you look at that, he throws a nice ball. You know, this is not all great revelations here. We know
that.
He's also not going to be playing for a while. So, but you look at that, you kind of get a sense that he's a very serious-minded guy. I thought Evan Engram was bigger than I thought he would be. You know,
yeah,
people
thicker.
Say, well, he's a really undersized tight end. Well, yeah, he's 235 pounds, but he's a well-proportioned 235 pounds, big arms. So when you look at him and say, this guy can't block at all, well, they didn't ask him to block much, and the Giants aren't going to line him up like Howard Cross and ask him to block either, but he looks like he's got some size and strength that he can, you know, at least be a serviceable guy there. And you've got a guy, you know, Dalvin Tomlinson just, you know, looks like a guy who is big and strong and even-tempered and is a guy who looks ready to make that quick jump. We'll see if he does. You know, that's the projection. You just get that sense. You know, those Alabama guys come in and, you know, they're not awed by anything because they've been surrounded by studs their whole life.
Yeah, absolutely. We're joined by Paul Schwartz in the New York Post. And, Paul, I want to zero in on the tight end position here. You mentioned Engram. Who do you think, when all is said and done, might be the odd man out here? Because all of a sudden, there's a lot of tight ends on this roster. You have Engram, you have Drell Adams, who was a draft pick last year. You have Red Ellison, who was brought in for agency. Matt Lacoste, they had high hopes for. He's been kind of hanging around the last 2 years, can't stay healthy. And then, of course, you have Will Tye. How do you see that, you know, breaking down? Because of Engram's and Ellison's versatility, could they keep four tight ends this year instead of three because they can kind of do a little bit of everything? Give me your thoughts on how things are going to break down with that tight end competition.
Yeah, that's it. Is, you know, how many do they keep? You know, the Giants. You know, no one will ever look at the Giants and say, "Wow, they have too many tight ends." You know, you say you got to give a real reason why they would keep four. You know, you have to break it down. You know, Red Ellison is here, and he's on the team. You know, he's a veteran, he's the blocker, so that's number one. He's a number one tight end. Then you look at Evan Engram. He's your first round draft pick, so he's on the team. You know, he's your number one, 1A, 2 tight end, so he's on the team. You know, and I always just look at the investment. You know, I mean, Drell Adams is a guy who is a draft pick. Will Tye is a guy who's not a draft pick. You know, Drell Adams is a guy who they invested a pick in, and I think they like him. You know, I think he had a decent rookie year. He's big. He's strong. He's very big target, and he's more of a blocker right now. So, you know, if you'd ask me to pick three, it would be Ellison, Engram, and Drell Adams. If you ask me to pick four, you know, then you're looking at Will Tye. You know, look, Matt Lacoste is a guy who's a nice guy, and he's been around a little bit. But, you know, he hasn't shown much except that, you know, when he shows some promise, he gets hurt.
Correct.
So we'll see. You know, we'll see. You know, it's not a knock. It's just the way it is.
Yep.
So he's a guy, you know, well, he needs a really good training camp and, you know, OTA session and everything like that. But, you know, I would say, you know, Will Tye is certainly a guy who needs to really come in and show – improvement as a blocker, you know, just everything, professionalism, everything, because, you know, he's got guys right now who are draft picks who I think are ahead of him.
Hey, Paul, you know, I thought the Giants were going to sign Blunt. I was kind of thinking that might have been until they drafted Chapman, and that kind of put a water
Goldman.
On my fire. Or, excuse me?
Goldman.
Oh, Goldman. Excuse me, Chapman. Well, I think it was too close to baseball. But anyway, so the running back position, I know we're staying on the offensive side of the football here, but, I, you know, this is an interesting backfield that I think the Giants have put together, and I like it. I like it a lot. Give us a little bit of what you think about the backfield, the starter. I think it's going to be Perkins. And maybe what the rotation will be in there.
Good question.
Well, unlike certain positions like punter, I think running back is a young man's game. I do. I think, and so I don't mind, you know, looking around and not seeing Ella Garrett Blunt out there. I really don't. I mean, I don't think the Giants' interest in him was that serious. I think they had some interest in him. I think it was more, you know, the agent drumming up interest. You know, was there a very low offer? You know, look, here's the deal. We all know this. When you offer a guy the absolute veteran minimum, and this guy's got some credentials, you're just throwing an offer out there. You know, it's a nibble. You know, you're not even baiting the line. You're just throwing a little crumb out there. And if he wants to grab it, if he wants to bite it, he'll bite it. But they don't expect it. They didn't expect him to take a minimum offer.
Right.
So, you know, this was not a serious – and I think before the draft it was, well, you know, if he takes it, he takes it, and then we'll see what we get in the draft, and we'll see what we do. Once the draft was done, I agree with you, Jeff. You know, I think the interest was almost non-existent in him. And look, do I go into 2017 saying they're set at running back? No, I don't. But, you know, I think Paul Perkins showed enough last year. You know, running backs you don't need. Look, the Cowboys did it one way, and you know, God bless them. They won a division, and the guy broke records. But you don't need Ezekiel Elliott, you know, a top five pick, you know, to come in there and be a great player. You don't need it, especially with Eli and Odell and Engram and Sterling Shepard and Brandon Marshall. You need a guy who can make people miss at times and run behind his blockers and you know, not get Eli killed by picking up a blitz. So, you know, I think Paul Perkins is an intriguing guy, one of the most intriguing guys on the roster. So I'm looking forward to him. You know, Shane Vereen fills a role if he can stay healthy. Orleans Darkwa, I kind of like a little bit, but he's been so banged up. You don't know what you're going to get with him. And Goldman, I think, is, you know, people describe him to me, he's a jack of all trades and a master of none. And you know, that's okay as long as he does everything pretty well. And if he's a big body who can get – look, they had 6 rushing touchdowns last year. That's pathetic. You know, that can't happen. You know, that just can't happen. So, I don't mind. It's a long way of saying I don't mind if there's not a proven veteran on the roster at running back. I think that's a position you can go with youth.
Do you think they'll have a short yardage back per se, or do you think that'll be something that they let Perkins do, or do you think that's a role Gallman or maybe even Sean Drone, someone like that can fill?
Well, I at this point, I don't – well, you know what? How about giving it to Mark Herslick as a – you know, let him be an H-back fullback and let him ram in there, right?
I don't think he'll hold on to the football.
I don't think so. I don't think there's going to be one guy. I mean, I think McAdoo likes versatile running backs, and you can't be predictable. You can't put Wayne Gallman in there on, you know, second and one and expect him, you know, at the 2-yard line and expect him just to ram it in. Will he develop into that? Maybe. He had a lot of touchdowns at Clemson at a very high-level program. Mm-hmm. But I think they think Perkins will be able to do it. You can throw the ball to Vereen in that situation. So I don't know if there's a guy – look, if they signed with Garrett Blount, he would be the short yardage guy. And, you know, everyone knew it was coming when the Patriots were lining up with him, and he still scored a ton of touchdowns. So I don't know if it'll develop that way. You know what? You can also throw a fade to Brandon Marshall. I think there's a lot of options there.
Defensively, we'll go to the other side. So, you know, you look at this defense from last year – there's not a lot to improve on. Of course, you never say that in the National Football League. You get kicked out of a meeting room in a second. But, you know, when you look at the defense, a lot of returning players, 10 out of the 11 guys coming back, a couple Pro Bowlers in there. You got JPP coming now at a healthy. I think that, you know, with this team and how they did last year and what they've done on the offensive side, you know, this I can expect a lot from this defense again this year. Being in, you know, just a year older, but with a lot more experience and then adding a couple key pieces, what do you think about the defense, Paul?
I agree with you. You look at it. Compared to if we talked last year, we'd
be
you know, we oh my gosh, right? We'd be saying, you know, the defense is coming off one of the worst years in, you know, the storied Giants history, and they signed some guys, but there was a lot of, you know, I mean, at this point, people thought Janoris Jenkins was a inconsistent, talented, overpaid player. They thought Vernon was a consistent, good, hard-nosed, overpaid player, right? You know, you didn't know about, you know, Landon Collins. You know, he was a nice rookie. You didn't know he was going to be one of the best defensive players in the league. You know, there was a lot. You know, Keenan Robinson was a guy whose reputation at Washington was a guy who was injury-prone. Pretty good player, but injury-prone and certainly not a stud. You know, DRC was not coming off a great year. You know, certainly he's coming off a tremendous year, you know, compared to last year. And Snacks Harrison was a guy who was a very good run stuffer. That, you know, we pretty much – but he was a guy for $42 million people thought was overpaid, one-dimensional player. He turned out to be maybe underpaid. So I agree, you know. But I do think there's a lot to improve on. If you remember, you know, early in the season, the pass rush was not great. You know, and then Vernon hurt his wrist, and he was not the player he became. And JPP was coming off, you know, JPP before he got hurt last year was a much better player than JPP the first, you know, several games. So I think the pass rush can definitely get better. I think the linebacker play can get better. You know, maybe, you know, a B.J. Goodson injects some, you know, young athleticism into that role, into that spot in the middle. You know, I definitely think they can improve on their pass rush. I think they can improve on their linebacker play. And I think defensive backfield, they just need to stay healthy and cohesive. And, you know, I don't know how much better they can be. If they are there the same, I think it'll be great.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Paul Roy, the only thing you could talk about in this defense is depth, because we all pretty much know who the starter is going to be.
About the depth, yeah.
Except for that one middle linebacker spot that you mentioned, and maybe B.J. Goodson can step in. Or who knows, maybe Keenan Robinson will be a three-down linebacker. He did that in Washington. No reason he can't do it now. How about depth at two specific spots? Defensive tackle is one. Besides Snacks, they don't really have anybody that's been a starter in this league. Obviously, they drafted somebody in the second round. And then also a corner. Once you get past the top three guys, we saw what happened in the playoffs last year against the Packers. What are you looking for from the depth at those two positions, cornerback and defensive tackle? And what do you think the Giants need to figure out there over the next couple of months?
Well, the second one you said, cornerback, is unquestionably you know, the one that people have to look at, right? Because we've all seen, you mentioned the playoffs, we've all seen in certain games where one guy tweaks his hamstring and then the other guy, you know, somebody else is hurt, and then all of a sudden you look and say, oh my gosh, you got some, you know, fourth string cornerback lining up against Dez Bryant or against, you know, one of these monsters, and you say, how can that happen? Well, it happens because you need about six of them, okay? That's how many you need. So I agree. Depth at cornerback is not great. You know, you have three that you can count on, and that's great, but you probably need at least two more. So I'm not, you know, they didn't draft one, which is interesting. You know, they like drafting one. You know, Cody Sensabaugh is not back. You know, Trevin Wade is not back. Now, you know, Trevin Wade was the guy who, you know, fans were love-hate relationship with, I would think, last year, but he was a guy who could do some things. So I think, you know, there are some issues there. They're going to have to see who emerges in training camp. Defensive tackle, I think, is all right. You know, Jay Brownlee and Robert Thomas are not – put it this way, you want Dalvin Tomlinson to win that starting job, and if he does, then you have Jay Brownlee and Robert Thomas as guys in the rotation, and I think that's certainly something you can live with.
Let's talk about Coach McAdoo. I mean, really, you think about his rookie season – pretty good.
You don't really think of him as like a second-year coach because he's been here for so long.
Yeah,
no, it's strange.
So, you know, we talk so much about the players, and of course the coach is always the guy that makes all the decisions. You know, what does Coach McAdoo, in your mind, have to do his second year better than he did his first year?
Well, I think there's a lot. You know, the record was great, but his offense was lousy a lot of times, and he's the offensive guy.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
He can't be scoring 18. You know, I'm not saying he's an offensive guy, but he's the offensive guy.
Well, he didn't
seem
like it last year a little bit, but that's, you know,
And yes, you're right. And also, you're right. You say, well, he's a young guy and he's a second year. But first of all, as you said, he's been the offensive coordinator 2 years before that, so he's been in the building. And also, he's not a youthful guy, and I don't mean that he's old. He doesn't act young. I don't think, you know, maybe you guys will correct me. I don't think he acts young. He's not very frivolous. he's just, you know, he has an older head to him. You know what I mean? He doesn't act like a young guy. You don't see, You know, he doesn't slip of the tongue too, you know, really. He's very guarded with what he said.
Agreed.
But he is a young guy, and he's an inexperienced head coach. And, you know, what he says and what he intimates, he feels he was hamstrung a bit last year, you know, by the personnel groupings that he had, which is why he stayed with three receivers virtually all the time. You know, they were a predictable offense. They were, you know, a poor running offense most of the year, and they were a poor scoring team the whole year, which was a problem for him. And, you know, Eli Manning did not have his best year after 2 years before that, which he was excellent. So I think he needs to establish. I think he was good at establishing that he's in control, that he's not just the offensive guy, you know, that he commanded the room. I think he was good at that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, excellent. But I think, you know, look, he had a lot of things on his plate. The Josh Brown situation was difficult. You know, he had controversies arising that were lingering, and in some ways, because Jerry Reese doesn't say much, he was hung out to dry a little bit. He was the point man who had to come address these things. He didn't have anybody to really lean on, and I think that took a toll on him. But I do think, look, he's the guy, you know, he had the fullbacks hurt last year. He's the guy who chose not to put a fullback on the roster. You know, he could have found someone. It wouldn't have been a Pro Bowl fullback, but he could have found someone if he went to Jerry Reese and said, I have to have a fullback in this offense. I can't be, you know, putting three receivers on the field all the time. So, you know, that's on him. The roster was on him to you know, a large extent. But this year with Rhett Ellison, you know, with possibly a fullback, you know, with more weapons, with Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers a year older, you know, they need to score 25 points a game again, 26 points a game again. They can't be down in the 18s, 19s. That just does not going
to
cut it.
Well, it would be a lot more fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And Paul, I think the billion-dollar question here, and if I don't ask it, a bunch of our callers will, you know, call up and try to string me up from the side of the building. You're right. They added the tight end, which kind of gives you the weapon down the seam, try to get teams out of that cover two sometimes. But do you think this team has made enough improvement in the running game and up front, blocking in the running game and protecting the quarterback, to make that next step to be the type of explosive offense that you think, with the talent that's on the roster now, they have the potential to be?
Well, it's you know, Odell and Sterling Shepard and, you know, Engram when he comes in. You know, they have targets. You know, now you know what's going to happen. I guarantee this, guys. I don't guarantee a lot of things. But in the OTAs or unquestionably in early in training camp, Eli Manning is going to be speaking to us, and someone is going to ask him. It won't be me, but someone will ask him, is this the best skill personnel yep. you've ever had? Is this the best group of receivers you've ever had? And Eli's going to laugh, and he's not going to say yes, and then we're going to think back to, what, Amani and Plaxico and Steve Smith, and we're going to think back to Odell and Victor Cruz and Mario Manningham, and then we're going to look at this group, and we're going to say, well, this group is probably the best.
You know, Paul, frankly, real quick, I would almost go back to 06 if you want to count the running backs in the mix. I mean, that Plaxico, Amani, Shockey, Tiki Barber combination was pretty damn good, too.
It was great. Yes, it was great. Because Tiki Barber is light years ahead of anybody
right.
in the backfield that they have now
yeah,
and probably will have.
We were good.
You're right about that. So they're right. There are they did not add a marquee running back. They drafted Wayne Gallman in the fourth round. What they get out of him as a rookie is, you know, whatever they get. It's probably not going to be something incredibly significant. Look, you said your you know, listeners will you know, string you up if you don't ask this. You know, my office, I know also, was always asking me, what about Flowers? What about
yep.
Hart? What about Flowers? What about them? Are they going to really bring those two out there again?
So glad you brought his name up because, yeah, after we hang up the phone, Charlie from Maine is going to call us and say, why didn't Paul talk about Flowers?
Okay, Charlie from Maine. I don't know if you're in Bangor or in Orono or, you know, but here we go,
yeah.
Charlie from Maine. Look, they're rolling the dice. I mean, Jerry Reese is rolling the dice. There's no other way to say it. You know, they're banking on Eric Flowers. You know, how many times has Jerry Reese said this summer? Not often, because we don't speak to him often. But when he's spoken, he said, Eric Flowers is 23. He could be coming out in this year's draft. Bobby Hart is 22, and he could be coming out in this year's draft. That is fine. I knew they wouldn't give up on Eric Flowers. Did I think they would maybe they would sign a veteran tackle who could compete for a starting job? Yes. I don't think that's DJ Fluker. I think he's a guard. You know, I mean, are they going to stick him out at right tackle? I don't think so. And I've been told that if they do, you're not going to like what you see. But he is a powerhouse, big, strong guard. And so he could certainly compete with John Jerry for for a job at a starting guard spot. You know what? It's like I said, it's on them. You know, they could have. You know, they didn't like the players in the draft, and that's fine. I get that. You know what I mean? You know, they didn't think Ryan Ramczyk or Cam Robinson was a guy who they could draft and say you're going to be our right tackle now or in the near future. Okay. A lot of scouts didn't think, agreed with that.
But, seemed the right, yeah.
But that's not to say that Ryan Ramczyk might not be, a better David Deal. You know, like I said, we all talk about David Deal. You know, we were there when David Deal was drafted, and he was a low pick who, a fifth round pick who, no one thought would start right away, and not everyone thought would be on the team, and he stayed healthy, and he was always there, and he was versatile, and he played, a decade at a million positions and won two Super Bowls. So, they've swung and missed a lot on the offensive line. And, when you draft a guy number nine and you swing and miss with him, it is a disaster. It sets the franchise back. So if Flowers is a swing and miss, it is a incredible crippling ripple effect on the whole roster. So he is going to be given every chance to play. He's the starting left tackle, and they better be right. Would I say I'm 100% sure? I think Ereck Flowers will be better than he was last year. I don't know if he's ever going to be a top flight left tackle. I think he's a right tackle, period. I think he's a right tackle. That's what he should be. And as far as Bobby Hart, they're really rolling the dice with saying that this guy is a starting caliber offensive tackle. That's just, and can Biznadi beat him out? I don't know. That's a lot to ask of a six-round draft pick. I would say to, Charlie in Maine and everyone else out there, to be determined. I'm not ready to say they've done enough here.
That won't be enough for Charlie. I can tell you that right now, Paul. Just what you said will not be enough.
Well,
that's good enough for me because we've said it over and over, the same thing.
Trust me. And Paul, final question, and I'll get Jeff's opinion on this after we say goodbye, too. If I had to, go to, Las Vegas and place a bet today, I would say the starting five offensive linemen in week one this year is going to be the same five starting offensive linemen that ended the season last year. Would you agree with me or not?
Before training camp and everything else, is DJ Fluker going to be? I think Fluker's going to start. I just think they drafted him, they signed him, for not a lot of money. I think he's going to find a way to be the starting right tackle, right guard.
I just
think he will do something in the summer, and they'll run behind him in preseason game, and they'll say we like that look. So I think he's going to start. He's moving out John Jerry. He's not moving out John Hanna. You know what I mean? I think that could definitely happen. I wouldn't be shocked if it didn't happen. Ereck Flowers is the barring injuries is the left tackle, I'm not a guy who's going to say Bobby Hart deserves the chance to start again. He deserves the chance, but he also deserves to be beaten out if someone's better. So it's largely the same offensive line. And let's face it, Weston Richburg and Justin Pugh can also improve. Also, they're good players. And they're on the precipice of getting, new contracts. So, I think as far as leadership and bringing this whole group together, I think they can improve there too. Offensive lines have to be very cohesive, and I don't think this was the most cohesive group I've seen, I'll tell you that much.
Do you think Pugh's the backup left tackle? It's a tough one, right? It's not easy.
I want to know who the backup right tackle is.
I would hope not. We've seen that before. He's moved around. He was drafted. He played left tackle at Syracuse. He's moved around. I think he's a guard. I think he will. The guard market is strong. And he's even commented about how much some of these guards make. And I don't think he wants to be, because left tackles make more money, but you also get exposed out there. So, he needs to have a Pro Bowl type season at guard to get paid. We throw you out there at left tackle and then you're exposed. But, Biznawati can be the backup. He's going to back up both spots, I would think, if he makes the team, which, the Giants certainly hope they do. Look, they don't have a lot of offensive tackles. That's just all there is to it. They don't have a lot. And, if there's an injury, they really don't have a lot. So, look, but this is, everyone knew it. It did not come out of the blue. This is not JPP having an accident and them having to scramble. They knew what was happening here, and this is the group that they assembled, and like I said, they are really banking on the two young tackles being better, being a lot better. And, you know, they were rated very poorly last year, so they're going to have to make big steps forward to be, you know, adequate or better than that.
Well, you know, when you think real quickly, you think of that offensive line and the depth in it. You know, if you think that Fluker is going to start a guard, I mean, John Jerry will be kind of there hanging. You know, he'll be the guy that gets a jersey every week. But if there is an injury at that right tackle, you know, Fluker can move to right tackle and John Jerry can be inserted back in there to the right guard. And Biznavati can be a guy that's – we talked about this last week. He may or may not get a jersey every week, just depending on the depth and injuries at that position. So it'll be an interesting battle. I think it's going to be fun to watch during training camp. And, you know, that's one position that everybody will have their eyes and ears on just to see who's going to start. But improvement is needed. I think we'll see it both from Flowers and from Bobby Hart because there's been a fire kind of lit under there. You know what? Just they got to play better. So.
No, there's no question. There's no, look, if they're not motivated this year.
They won't be motivated, you know, next year.
they will be motivated. Right. And, you know, and from what we hear, they've been in the building all off season working hard.
They have been.
You know, they have to take the coaching. I mean, especially Eric Flowers. He's a big, strong guy who's got ability and, you know, came out at age 21. But, you know, he had terrible technique, you know, terrible hand placement, terrible technique. You know, he reached, he committed penalties. And, you know, he has to, you know, he had, this is his second offensive line coach. So, you know, he's already gone through one offensive line coach. I don't think they're going to recycle another one through here to service Eric Flowers. So, you know, he has to take the coaching and take it to heart and become more professional. That's all there is to it. You know, he's been in the building, which is great. And now we'll see if he, you know, is intuitive enough to change some very sloppy tendencies and improve. I mean, he has to because, you know, his future in the league really depends on it. You know, I mean, let's face it. I mean, these guys can come and go pretty quickly unless they, you know, show you know, to show that they get it.
And, Paul, I'm going to break some bad news to your readers. We're not going to know that until the second week of training camp when pads come on and they start doing those one-on-ones between Olivier Vernon and Eric Flowers. So it's going to be a little while until we can really see if he and Bobby Hart have taken that next step. Paul, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much, and we'll see you at OTAs on Monday. Paul Dottino is very excited to get started, and he's very excited to see you.
Well, I would say likewise. No, I'll say likewise. Okay, I'll say likewise.
That's good.
Yes, I would say likewise. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, right, Paul. Great stuff from Paul Schwartz in the New York Post. Fine. He was going to take a shot there, but he pulled back. I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah, because
he's a nice guy. I love Paul.
Because, you know, Paul's listening to the show, so that's why I didn't do
he's
it.
He's on his Nike 5 listening to the show.
Yeah, he's got it on his phone and got his headphones. But Flowers has got to represent the U, by the way. He's got to play better.
What do you think the starting five offensive line is going to be? I think it's still going to be Hart, Jerry, Richburg, Pugh, and Flowers.
Hart,
I think it's going to be the same.
Richburg, Pugh, and Flowers.
Yes, I do. I think it's going to be the same.
I actually think that
I'm not buying the Fluker until I see it.
But see, here's my, and I tend to agree with what Paul Schwartz had said about they brought him in as a free agency. They paid him money. Now remember, John Jerry was a free agent too, and they re-signed him
to a bigger contract than Fluker got.
And so then you got to kind of. So I actually, in my opinion, I think it's going to be going right to left: Fluker, Jerry, Richburg, Pugh, Flowers.
See, I agree. I think Fluker has a better chance of beating out Hart than he does Jerry. But I do believe that he's a better. He's more fit body type-wise to be a guard than a tackle, but I think Jerry's a better player than Hart. So it's a weird kind of combination there on the right side.
And it's all going to come down to competition.
Yeah.
It's just going to be who plays better and who's going to get a job.
And Pro Football Focus, by the way, did think that Fluker was a better tackle than he was a guard, for whatever that's worth.
Really? Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, listen, I don't think you could go wrong either way. Obviously, if he earned his way onto the field, it's going to be at a guard or a tackle position. Captain Obvious there. Okay.
And now the response.
I got a bad feeling.
Oh,
about
yes.
This.
Here we go.
Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right. And
enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
Charlie, we're having guests now talking directly to you.
That's unbelievable.
How are you?
I am good. An epic failure. Biblical.
By us? By us? That was an excellent interview. I disagree.
By J.R. lowballing Blunt.
Oh, come on, Charlie. LeGarrette Blount's not a difference maker. This is why. And look, I'm being
a difference maker.
I'm being
we
consistent.
Needed a thumper.
Charlie.
We needed somebody who could run the clock out.
Charlie.
We needed somebody who could, you know, get that fourth and one, third and one. It would have helped our defense. It would have, you know, helped our offense. And we don't have that guy. We are depending on a second year running back. And we have nobody behind him but a rookie and a guy who's been injured, Dakwa, and a guy we just picked up off the couch chip heap in drones. I mean, how can you not?
Well, he was a starter last year, in fairness.
But how can you not pick this guy up, and how can you disrespect him and offer him the minimum? I mean, I am glad he went to Philly because I know Blount has got us this – against the Giants circled on his calendar, and he's going to say, J.R., you want to disrespect me and offer me a minimum? I can't wait to play your team.
Wait, Charlie, hold on a second. Hold on.
Listen.
At least the Giants offered him something. 28 teams didn't even want him. Who is he more mad at, the team that wanted him a little bit or the teams that didn't want him at all?
Look, you may as well not have wanted if you're going to offer him the minimum. The guy scored 18 touchdowns last year. How can you disrespect that? And I know Paul... P-Dot, probably he was sick to his stomach yesterday hearing that the Phillies got him and we didn't.
Hey, Charlie, look,
because
I'm being...
he knows how we don't have – you were just talking about this O-line, how pathetic it is, and we can't even run block. You need a guy who can make his own holes and run block.
Charlie, when Blount was – I'm being consistent. When Blount was a free agent, I said, yeah, sure, he'd be a nice addition, but I didn't think it was essential. I really don't, and I still don't think it's essential now. I think they'll be able to figure it out with the guys on the roster. Running back is not an old guy position. It's a young man's position. I think they will be fine.
He's not an old guy. He's 30 years old, scoring 18 touchdowns.
30 years old is old for a running back.
If you don't think that guy could have really helped our team.
I do.
If I was McAdoo, I would have been banging my shoes on the desk to JR saying, get me this guy. Because this guy is going to help our offense, and I'm sure Spags is sitting there. Thank you very much, JR.
Go ahead.
Thank you for not getting this guy and sending him to Philly, so I have to face him twice a year.
No, I agree. I agree with some points here, Charlie. I would have liked to see them sign him because, and I actually thought they were. Where's my cough? But
Jeff, you're doing all right, man.
Yeah, I'm doing
all
right.
Okay,
but. But listen, you cannot not look at his production in the red zone, something where the defense, the offense really needed a pick-me-up. They went out and get Brandon Marshall. They've now got a 6'4" tight end. I feel like a power back in the red zone down there, or green zone if you want to call it, would have been a great complement to the additions that they've already made on offense. That's just me
exactly speaking.
And I, you know, but there's nothing we can do about it, Charlie. You like me.
I can scream about it.
Yes,
and
you can scream about it. But you know
JR
what?
JR is the worst GM in the history of the NFL.
Oh, geez.
Okay, in the history. Yeah, we're going to go way back. I'm sure we can find worse GMs than Jerry Reese in the history of the National Football League. I can tell you that right now.
Please.
But the fact is
thank
that
you, Charlie. We got to run. The show's ending, pal.
I would have personally, I just gave you my opinion on but listen, I think Paul hit the nail on the head. It's a young man's game. At the running back position, they have a handful of guys that they believe that can work. Remember, if Shane Vereen can stay healthy, he can run the football. You know, he can get the ball in his hands 8 or 10 times a game like they wanted to last year until he got hurt. But the fact is they do have some guys that can score touchdowns, and you got to go with the guys that are here.
Charlie, with hyperbole, who would have guessed?
Hyperbole, what?
Hyperbole.
Yes.
Doing, you know, going a little over
of
the
course.
Top.
Yeah, he's way before.
It's time for everyone's favorite game.
My favorite game.
Did he play with Jeff Fiegel?
One for one
I
last
I don't have
week.
A great memory.
22 NFL seasons.
Wow.
Hundreds of players.
Fiegel's with the Eagles.
Let's see who Jeff remembers.
You can make a mockery of my memory.
Here's your host.
And we do.
That was just so.
And we do.
John.
And you
no.
do.
So what's your record there, Fiegel?
We are 21-15. That's a lot of questions you've asked me over the months here.
I think I got some tough ones for you this year.
36 guys you have asked me about.
And I have some tough ones for you now, okay? So here we go. We're going to start with this. Did you ever play with Tim Harris? Tim Harris.
Yes. Timmy Harris.
What You have no idea what team you played on him with, do you? What team did you play on him with?
The Eagles.
Damn. Got it.
There it
You're
is.
Absolutely yeah. correct.
You should have known when I said Timmy.
No, usually you like make
you
that up.
Saying? No, Timmy Harris. Timmy Harris. Yeah, nice
that's
guy.
Funny.
Safety. Safety.
Correct. Not linebacker, actually.
No,
that's
he
okay.
Wasn't. Yes, he was. Was he really? He was,
so
a
says he was a linebacker for the Packers, a couple years with 49ers, and then he went to the Philadelphia
Maybe
Eagles.
It was the wrong Tim Harris I was thinking about, and I got it right anyway.
Are you kidding me?
Well, that's going down as a win.
You know what happens sometimes? Sometimes there are actually two guys at the – you know what? There was a Tim Harris – No, he was just in 1983. So no, you.
Okay, yeah, that's him.
Your Tim Harris is fictitious.
But it was in the 90s, right?
By the rules, yeah. By the rules, you still win.
Yes. Okay.
Did you play with number two, Derek Oden? Did you play with Derek Oden?
I did play with a Derek Oden from the Cardinals.
Back. Is why you fail.
where did that one come from?
I put a lot of new ones on here.
Derek Oden, no.
You played with him. He for the Philadelphia Eagles.
He was
also a linebacker. He was there from 93 to 95.
Okay, because I said
special
the,
teams I, player, which is why I thought
said
you
the
might
Cardinals because 94 I was in Arizona. I thought the Oden was there, and
now, so you were with him in 93 in Philadelphia.
Okay, all right. So at least I halfway.
You've been
correct.
Actually pretty consistent splitting these the last couple times.
Well, I've
you
been
played.
Studying the rosters over the last 22 years. I wanted to just let everybody know that. No, I'm just kidding.
Now, Jeff, you're not here next week. What's your big? You got a big vacation going? What do you got going?
Well, it's Memorial Day weekend. Yes, I'm heading down to Florida I'm 51, so I have a lot of my friends turning 50. And so we're heading down for a friend's vacation
You're
down
golfing?
In the Keys. No, we're not golfing. We're fishing.
Really?
Yep.
Make sure you watch ahead when you get on that boat.
Oh, watch the coral. Oh, man. But we're going to have a good time. Yeah, I'm going down there, and then earlier part of the week I'm going to be in Jacksonville. I'm heading to Coach Coughlin's golf tournament this Sunday. And I'll be down there for a couple of days and then heading to the Keys for 3 or 4 days. And then we'll be back next week, the following week.
Make sure you bring that hat and sunscreen down there with you,
it
right,
will
pal?
Be. I know. I'm good. I'm good with that stuff.
Not to mention the bug spray.
And the bug spray. Oh, yeah, I know. I forgot about the bugs.
Well, trust me. Let me put it this way. Me and my pregnant wife, basically, we're looking for a baby moon place, and Zika is everywhere. Literally everywhere. So yeah. We're not going anywhere because it's
I'm not
going
to have any more kids, so my wife doesn't have to
no,
worry
but
about
Zika
that.
Actually does stuff to you even if you're not pregnant. It gives you aches and pains, and you get tired. It's not fun.
I think I have Zika now. I have aches and pains, and I'm tired every day. What the heck?
All right, Fees, good stuff. We appreciate the time. Tomorrow it's Lance and Dottino. I'm off tomorrow taking a little three-day weekend and prep for OTAs. So we'll be back in the next week when OTAs begin. Giants.com. We'll have coverage of that with media access on Monday with press conferences and interviews. And then we'll have coverage of practice, photos, videos, highlights, all that good stuff as well as the OTAs take place for the next 3 weeks until mandatory minicamp in the middle of June. For Feegs, I'm Schmelk. Have a great
Later.
Weekend. Adios.